You are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee, 104.1 FM, and RiverWestRadio.com globally. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome once again to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Welcome to the third installment of the Anti's Salute to Women. In the first of this short series, we read the transcript of Lucy Parsons' address to the very first convention of the the Industrial Workers of the World back in 1905 in Chicago. Then last week, we read an article on wages for housework. We read a few different sources about that movement, and that movement will again be the topic of this week's show. Last week, I mentioned that the movement is oftentimes also referred to as wages against housework. That phrase comes directly from an essay written originally by Silvia Federici that was originally published in the Power of Women Collective and Falling Wall Press back in 1975. We're going to read that in its entirety, so we're going to try and get through this as quickly as we can, so there may potentially be room for discussion following. But first, let's hear from Silvia Federici, her seminal work, Wages Against Housework. They say it is love. We say it is unwaged work. They call it frigidity. We call it absenteeism. Every miscarriage is a work accident. Homosexuality and heterosexuality are both working conditions, but homosexuality is workers' control of production, not the end of work. More smiles, more money. Nothing will be so powerful in destroying the healing virtues of a smile. Neuroses, suicides, desexualization, occupational diseases of the housewife. Many times the difficulties and ambiguities which women express in discussing wages for housework stem from the reduction of wages for housework to a thing, a lump of money, instead of viewing it as a political perspective. The difference between these two standpoints is enormous. To view wages for housework as a thing rather than a perspective is to detach the end result of our struggle from the struggle itself and to miss its significance in demystifying and subverting the role to which women have been confined in capitalist society. When we view wages for housework in this reductive way, we start asking ourselves, what difference could some more money make in our lives? We might even agree that for a lot of women who do not have any choice except for housework and marriage, it would indeed make a lot of difference. But for those of us who seem to have other choices, professional work, enlightened husband, communal way of life, gay relations, or a combination of these, it would not make much of a difference at all. For us, there are supposedly other ways of achieving economic independence, and the last thing we want is to get it by identifying ourselves as housewives, a fate which we all agree is, so to speak, worse than death. The problem with this position is that in our imagination, we usually add a bit of money to the lives we have now and then ask, so what? On the false premise that we could ever get that money without at the same time revolutionizing in the process of struggling for it all our family and social relations. But if we take wages for housework as a political perspective, we can see that struggling for it is going to produce a revolution in our lives and in our social power as women. It is also clear that if we think we do not need that money, it is because we have accepted the particular forms of prostitution of body and mind by which we get the money to hide that need. As I will try to show, not only is wages for housework a revolutionary perspective, but it is the only revolutionary perspective from a feminist viewpoint and ultimately for the entire working class. A labor of love. It is important to recognize that when we speak of housework, we are not speaking of a job as other jobs, but we are speaking of the most pervasive manipulation, the most subtle and mystified violence that capitalism has ever perpetrated against any section of the working class. True, under capitalism, every worker is manipulated and exploited, and his or her relation to capital is totally mystified. The wage gives the impression of a fair deal. You work and you get paid, hence you and your boss are equal, while in reality, the wage, rather than paying for the work you do, hides all the unpaid work that goes into profit. But the wage at least recognizes that you are a worker, and you can bargain and struggle around and against the terms and the quantity of that wage, the terms and the quantity of that work. To have a wage means to be part of a social contract, and there is no doubt concerning its meaning. You work, not because you like it or because it comes naturally to you, but because it is the only condition under which you are allowed to live. But exploited as you might be, you are not that work. Today you are a postman, tomorrow a cab driver. All that matters is how much of that work you have to do and how much of that money you can get. But in the case of housework, the situation is qualitatively different. The difference lies in the fact that not only has housework been imposed on women, but it has been transformed into a natural attribute of our female physique and personality. An internal need. An aspiration, supposedly coming from the depth of our female character. Housework had to be transformed into a natural attribute rather than be recognized as a social contract because from the beginning of capital's scheme for women, this work was destined to be unwaged. Capital had to convince us that it is a natural, unavoidable, and even fulfilling activity to make us accept our unwaged work. In its turn, the unwaged condition of housework has been the most powerful weapon in reinforcing the common assumption that housework is not work, thus preventing women from struggling against it, except in the privatized kitchen-bedroom quarrel that all societies agree to ridicule, thereby further reducing the protagonist of a struggle. We are seen as nagging bitches, not workers in struggle. Yet just how natural is it to be a housewife is shown by the fact that it takes at least 20 years of socialization, day-to-day training, performed by an unwaged mother, to prepare a woman for this role, to convince her that children and husband are the best she can expect from life. Even so, it hardly succeeds. No matter how well trained we are, few are the women who do not feel cheated when the bride's day is over and they find themselves in front of a dirty sink. Many of us still have the illusion that we marry for love. A lot of us recognize that we marry for money and security, but it is time to make it clear that while the love or money involved is very little, the work which awaits us is enormous. This is why older women always tell us, enjoy your freedom while you can. Buy whatever you want now. But unfortunately, it is almost impossible to enjoy any freedom if from the earliest days of life you are trained to be docile, subservient, dependent, and most important, to sacrifice yourself and even to get pleasure from it. If you don't like it, it is your problem, your failure, your guilt, your abnormality. We must admit that capital has been very successful in hiding our work. It has created a true masterpiece at the expense of women. By denying housework a wage and transforming it into an act of love, capital has killed many birds with one stone. First of all, it has got a hell of a lot of work almost for free, and it has made sure that women, far from struggling against it, would seek that work as the best thing in life. The magic words, yes, darling, you are a real woman. At the same time, it has disciplined the male worker also, by making his woman dependent on his work and his wage, and trapped him in this discipline by giving him a servant after he himself has done so much serving at the factory or the office. In fact, our role as women is to be the unwaged but happy, and most of all loving, servants of the working class, i.e. those strata of the proletariat to which capital was forced to grant more social power. In the same way as God created Eve to give pleasure to Adam, so did capital create housewife to service the male worker physically, emotionally, and sexually, to raise his children, mend his socks, patch up his ego when it is crushed by the work and social relations, which are relations of loneliness, that capital has reserved for him. It is precisely this peculiar combination of physical, emotional, and sexual services that are involved in the role women must perform for capital that creates the specific character of that servant, which is the housewife, that makes her so burdensome and at the same time invisible. It is not an accident that most men start thinking of getting married as soon as they get their first job. This is not only because now they can afford it, but because having somebody at home who takes care of you is the only condition not to go crazy after a day spent on an assembly line or at a desk. Every woman knows that this is what she should be doing to be a true woman and have a quote-unquote successful marriage. And in this case, too, the poorer the family, the higher the enslavement of the woman, and not simply because of the monetary situation. In fact, capital has a dual policy, one for the middle class and one for the proletarian family. It is no accident that we find the most unsophisticated machismo in the working class family. The more blows the man gets at work, the more his wife must be trained to absorb them, the more he is allowed to recover his ego at her expense. You beat your wife and vent your rage against her when you are frustrated or overtired by your work, or when you are defeated in a struggle, and to go into a factory is itself a defeat. The more the man serves and is bossed around, the more he bosses around. A man's home in his castle, and his wife has to learn to wait in silence when he is moody, to put him back together when he is broken down and swears at the world, to turn around in bed when he says, "I'm too tired tonight," or when he goes so fast at lovemaking that, as one woman put it, he might as well make it with a mayonnaise jar. Women have always found ways of fighting back or getting back at them, but always in an isolated and privatized way. The problem then becomes how to bring this struggle out of the kitchen and bedroom and into the streets. This fraud that goes under the name of love and marriage affects us all, even if we are not married, because once housework was totally naturalized and sexualized, once it became a feminine attribute, all of us as females are characterized by it. If it is natural to do certain things, then all women are expected to do them and even like doing them. Even those women who, due to their social position, could escape some of that work or most of it, their husbands can afford maids and shrinks and other forms of relaxation and amusement. We might not serve one man, but we are all in a servant relation with respect to the whole male world. That is why to be called a female is such a put-down, such a degrading thing. Quote, "Smile, honey, what's the matter with you?" Unquote, is something every man feels entitled to ask you, whether he is your husband or the man who takes your ticket or your boss at work. The revolutionary perspective. If we start from this analysis, we can see the revolutionary implications of the demand for wages for housework. It is the demand by which our nature ends and our struggle begins, because just to want wages for housework means to refuse that work as the expression of our nature, and therefore to refuse precisely the female role that capital has invented for us. To ask for wages for housework will by itself undermine the expectations society has of us, since those expectations, the essence of our socialization, are all functional to our wageless condition in the home. In this sense, it is absurd to compare the struggle of women for wages to the struggle of male workers in the factory for more wages. The waged worker, in struggling for more wages, challenges his social role but remains within it. When we struggle for wages, we struggle unambiguously and directly against our social role. In the same way, there is a qualitative difference between the struggles of the waged worker and the struggles of the slave for a wage against that slavery. It should be clear, however, that when we struggle for a wage, we do not struggle to enter capitalist relations, because we have never been out of them. We struggle to break capital's plan for women, which is an essential moment of that planned division of labor and social power within the working class, through which capital has been able to maintain its power. Wages for housework, then, is a revolutionary demand, not because by itself it destroys capital, but because it attacks capital and forces it to restructure social relations in terms more favorable to us, and consequently more favorable to the unity of the class. In fact, to demand wages for housework does not mean to say that if we are paid, we will continue to do it. It means precisely the opposite. To say that we want money for housework is the first step towards refusing to do it, because the demand for a wage makes our work visible, which is the most indispensable condition to begin to struggle against it, both in its immediate aspect as housework and its more insidious character as femininity. Against any accusation of economism, we should remember that money is capital, i.e., it is the power to command labor. Therefore, to reappropriate that money, which is the fruit of our labor, of our mother's and grandmother's labor, means at the same time to undermine capital's power to command forced labor from us. And we should not distrust the power of the wage in demystifying our femaleness and making visible our work, our femaleness as work, since the lack of wage has been so powerful in shaping this role and hiding our work. To demand wages for housework is to make it visible that our minds, bodies, and emotions have all been distorted for a specific function, in a specific function, and then have been thrown back at us as a model to which we should all conform if we want to be accepted as women in this society. To say that we want wages for housework is to expose the fact that housework is already money for capital, that capital has made and makes money out of our cooking, smiling, f***ing. At the same time, it shows that we have cooked, smiled, f***ed throughout the years, not because it was easier for us than for anybody else, but because we did not have any other choice. Our faces have become distorted from so much smiling. Our feelings have got lost from so much loving. Our over-sexualization has left us completely desexualized. Wages for housework is only the beginning, but its message is clear. From now on, they have to pay us because as females, we do not guarantee anything any longer. We want to call work what it is, so that eventually we might rediscover what is love and create what will be our sexuality, which we have never known. And from the viewpoint of work, we can ask not one wage, but many wages, because we have been forced into many jobs at once. We are housemaids, prostitutes, nurses, shrinks. This is the essence of the heroic spouse who is celebrated on Mother's Day. We say, stop celebrating our exploitation, our supposed heroism. From now on, we want money for each moment of it, so that we can refuse some of it and eventually all of it. In this respect, nothing can be more effective than to show that our female virtues have a calculable money value. Until today, only for capital, increased in the measure that we were defeated. From now on, against capital, for us, in the measure we organize our power. The struggle for social services. This is the most radical perspective we can adopt, because although we can ask for everything, daycare, equal pay, free laundromats, we will never achieve any real change unless we attack our female role at its roots. Our struggle for social services, i.e., for better working conditions, will always be frustrated if we do not first establish that our work is work. Unless we struggle against the totality of it, we will never achieve victories with respect to any of its moments. We will fail in the struggle for the free laundromats unless we first struggle against the fact that we cannot love except at the price of endless work, which day after day cripples our bodies, our sexuality, our social relations. Unless we first escape the blackmail whereby our need to give and receive affection is turned against us as a work duty for which we constantly feel resentful against our husbands, children, and friends, and guilty for that resentment. Getting a second job does not change that role, and as years and years of female work outside the house still witness. The second job not only increases our exploitation, but simply reproduces our role in different forms. Wherever we turn, we can see that the jobs of women perform are mere extensions of the housewife condition in all its implications. That is, not only do we become nurses, maids, teachers, secretaries, all functions for which we are well trained in the home, but we are in the same bind that hinders our struggles in the home. Isolation, the fact that our other people's lives depend on us, or the impossibility to see where our work begins and ends, where our work ends and our desires begin. Is bringing coffee to your boss and chatting with him about his marital problems secretarial work, or is it a personal favor? Is the fact that we have to worry about our looks on the job a condition of work, or is it the result of female vanity? Until recently, airline stewardesses in the United States were periodically weighed and had to be constantly on a diet, a torture that all women know for fear of being laid off. As is often said, when the needs of the waged labor market require her presence there, a woman can do any job without losing her femininity, which simply means that no matter what you do, you are still a cunt. As for the proposal of socialization and collectivization of housework, a couple of examples will be sufficient to draw a line between these alternatives and our perspective. It is one thing to set up a daycare center the way we want it and demand that the state pay for it. It is quite another thing to deliver our children to the state and ask the state to control them, discipline them, teach them to honor the American flag, not for 5 hours, but for 15 or 24 hours. It is one thing to organize communally the way we want to eat, by ourselves, in groups, etc., and then ask the state to pay for it, and it is the opposite thing to ask the state to organize our meals. In one case, we regain some control over our lives. In the other, we extend the state's control over us. The struggle against housework. Some women say, how is wages for housework going to change the attitudes of our husbands towards us? Won't our husbands still expect the same duties as before and even more than before once we are paid for them? But these women do not see that they can expect so much from us precisely because we are not paid for our work. Because they assume that it is a woman's thing, which does not cost us much effort. Men are able to accept our services and take pleasure in them because they presume that housework is easy for us, that we enjoy it because we do it for their love. They actually expect us to be grateful because by marrying us or living with us, they have given us the opportunity to express ourselves as women, i.e. to serve them. You are lucky you have found a man like me. Etc. Only when men see our work as work, our love as work, and most important, our determination to refuse both, will they change their attitude towards us. When hundreds and thousands of women are in the streets saying that endless cleaning, being always emotionally available, fighting at command for fear of losing our jobs is hard, hated work which wastes our lives, then they will be scared and feel undermined as men. But this is the best thing that can happen from their own point of view, because by exposing the way capital has kept us divided, capital has disciplined them through us and us through them, each other against each other, we, their crutches, their slaves, their chains, open the process of their liberation. In this sense, wages for housework will be much more educational than trying to prove that we can work as well as them, that we can do the same jobs. We leave this worthwhile effort to the career woman, the woman who escapes from her oppression not through the power of unity and struggle, but through the power of the master, the power to oppress, usually other women. And we don't have to prove that we can break the blue collar barrier. A lot of us broke that barrier a long time ago and have discovered that the overalls did not give us more power than the apron. If possible, even less, because now we had to wear both and had less time and energy to struggle against them. The things we have to prove are our capacity to expose what we are already doing, what capital is doing to us, and our power in the struggle against it. Unfortunately, many women, particularly single women, are afraid of the perspective of wages for housework because they are afraid of identifying even for a second with the housewife. They know that this is the most powerless position in society, and so they do not want to realize that they are housewives too. This is precisely their weakness, a weakness which is maintained and perpetuated through the lack of self-identification. We want and have to say that we are all housewives, we are all prostitutes, and we are all gay, because until we recognize our slavery, we cannot recognize our struggle against it. Because as long as we think we are something better, something different than a housewife, we accept the logic of the master, which is a logic of division. And for us, the logic of slavery. We are all housewives because no matter where we are, they can always count on more work from us, more fear on our side to put forward our demands, and less pressure on them for money, since hopefully our minds are directed elsewhere, to that man in our present or our future who will, quote unquote, take care of us. And we also delude ourselves that we can escape housework. But how many of us, in spite of working outside the house, have escaped it? And can we really so easily disregard the idea of living with a man? What if we lose our jobs? What about aging and losing even the minimal amount of power that youth, productivity, and attractiveness, female productivity, afford us today? And what about children? Will we ever regret having chosen not to have them, not even having been able to realistically ask that question? And can we afford gay relations? Are we willing to pay the possible price of isolation and exclusion? But can we really afford relations with men? The question is, why are these our only alternatives, and what kind of struggle will move us beyond them? New York, spring 1974. All right, it looks like we don't really have enough time for discussion on this topic. I will remind all of you that that was the essay Wages Against Housework, written originally by Sylvia Federici and published in 1975 by Power of Women Collective and Falling Wall Press. We had an earlier episode about how, you know, feminism must be anti-capitalist to be truly emancipatory for everybody, you know, including women and men, non-gender binary people, LGBTQI people, and the whole human family. And I think that this essay, Wages Against Housework, absolutely speaks to that. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I'm your host, NTSC, and we'll be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can all be found at the archives on creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com. Speaking of River West Radio, stay tuned to 104.1 FM or to riverwestradio.com to hear even more awesome programming, and we'll see you next week.